Good afternoon. It's good to be back with you this afternoon. I'm not going to necessarily preach a lesson, but I want us to begin by reading a verse in Acts chapter 15. Because the purpose of the report is several fold, obviously to let you know the work that I've been doing and intend to continue doing. But I think there's more to it than that as well. In Acts chapter 15 and verse 3, you may remember that on this occasion, Paul and Barnabas are on their way from Antioch to Jerusalem to meet with the elders and the apostles there about circumcision. And it says, so being sent on their way by the church, they passed through Phoenicia and Samaria, describing the conversion of the Gentiles, and they caused great joy to all the brethren. That's part of the reason. That's part of the benefit of doing a report, is to encourage you, to help you to share in the joy. We're going to be talking about some brand new churches. One of them began in about April of this year, and we'll get into that in a moment. So that's part of it. The other part is, brethren, to just say, we need help. We need your help. I know y'all let George go to Jamaica every year, and I do not go to Jamaica. I have never been to Jamaica. There's plenty of people going there, so I have no intention of going. But I know that they need help there, because the places I go, I see. And I appreciate very much your allowing him to go there, because there's a lot of churches that don't see the importance of that. Now, I want you to think for just a moment. When I say to you, Caribbean, what do you think? What's the first thing that comes into your mind? And if you're seeing resorts and cruise ships and so on and so forth, you're not alone. Okay? Because that's what most people think of. But what most people don't realize is that there are 26 million people that live in the Eastern Caribbean. And I'll show you another the map again in a moment. Just think about that. 26 million people. And among those 26 million people, at this particular moment in time, there are 3 full-time preachers. 3. That's all. You have 13 million who speak Spanish, and that's in the Dominican Republic and in Puerto Rico. Remember that, because we're going to come back to that in a little bit. 9.4 million Haiti and a couple of the islands that speak French. But there are 4 million people who speak only English. And most of the time when people hear Caribbean, again, they think Spanish. No, there are 4 million people who don't know any more Spanish than you do. Probably less. They speak only English. So Spanish is not a prerequisite. But putting just think about those 13 million that speak Spanish. Then there are 41 million in Central America who speak Spanish, not including Belize. There are in South America 371 million who speak Spanish, again, not including Brazil that speaks Portuguese. Mexico is another 112 million. By the time you get through with people in this hemisphere who speak Spanish, you're almost to 550 million people. And my daughter works in the website division of something, and in her research she has found that the Hispanic market, and we're obviously looking at this from a business standpoint, is the fastest growing segment online. And brethren, it doesn't matter where. In the Dominican Republic, which is still relatively poor, there's a internet cafe on every corner. They have access. Again, many of the preachers that have been the mainstays of that work in the past are now in their 70s and 80s. And they're just not able to travel like they used to. That's where I'm trending. And yet there's a lot of work that needs to be done in the Eastern Caribbean. Now, Let's see. Okay, where's the pointer, George?
The arrow.
Okay, there we go. Okay. You see this line right here. Basically, this is the Eastern Caribbean from that line over. And that's the area that I'm have been dealing with. We were in St. Croix, which is right here, for 8 years. But all the brethren in St. Croix are from all these other islands. And that's how we began to go to some of these other islands. To Dominica first, then to other places. And there are churches there that we've been able to teach. Some of them, a number of them, have left the institutional their institutional practices, have moved on to other things. But when you look at this, and again, we're talking 4 million people in these islands here, right from Puerto Rico over. When you look at those, the number of sound churches, there are probably 15 to 20 in the Dominican Republic, almost 9 million people. In Puerto Rico, there are 4. And there's one in St. Croix. There's one in St. Thomas, which is just above it there. There's one in Antigua. There's 2 in Dominica. 1 in Grenada. That's it. Now, there are a lot of places that are willing to listen, that I can go and preach anytime, because they want to know. They want to learn. They continue to go forward. But brethren, there's a lot of work. And I'm just one man. Oh, sorry, did I forget one? Oh, I skipped Barbados. Sorry. There's one in Barbados, and there's a lot to be done there. In Puerto Rico, which is where we were up until March of this year, there are the 4 churches. There's 2 that meet in this area. In Caparra is the name of the area. Then there's 1 in Dorado, and there's 1 over here in this area, which is in Moca. The ones in Caparra is Spanish and English. They've been meeting that way in the same building for over 30 years. And when they told me, I was told that y'all meet at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I thought, oh, that's a great arrangement. Because in Caparra, what we do is we would have from 9 to 11 in Spanish. Then we take about a 30-minute break. And from 11:30 to 1:15, or whenever the preacher got through, that was Spanish. Sorry, we did English and then Spanish. And so, you know, we were eating about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's a long time to wait. But the churches there have grown. This is the Spanish, most of the members in the Spanish-speaking church. When we arrived there, there was Sister Carmen and an older brother who was at that time 90. He's since passed away. Most Sundays there was Dana and I and the 2 of them. There are now 15 to 20. In English, you see most of the group right here. This is Joel Holt, who's preaching there now. His wife, Anna. This man is not a Christian yet. This is the day Judith was baptized. Prince, we're working on him. His dad is a Christian. In fact, the church for many years in Dominica met in his dad's house. But he's not there yet. But that's the church in Caparra. The church in Moca began about 3 years ago. And there are about 5 or 6 over there. And then we also have the church in Dorado. Now, everybody in Puerto Rico goes to church, and I'm using it the way they would use it, goes to church on Good Friday. That's what you're supposed to do. And so the church at Dorado has a service typically on Friday, Good Friday morning. And that is the biggest attendance they have all year. They probably have between 15 to 20. But then on Good Friday, they'll invite some preacher from the area to, you know, one of the 2 or 3 that there are, to come and preach. And they may have as many as 40 or 50 people. But that's the beginning. And this is my other parents in Puerto Rico, right there. Then this is the sister whose house the church in Moca, Median, for some time. Now, when you go to the Dominican Republic, there's over 130 churches of Christ. The vast majority of those are what we would say liberal, institutional, but there's a number of them that are not. That number is growing because as the others get more progressive, there are more and more brethren who are willing to study and to see. This is one of the churches out in the country from San Pedro. This is our sister, your sister, Magdalena. Magdalena would be so happy to be here today to see this many of you. This picture, that's me, that's Nino there. I'll talk about Nino again in a minute. When we took this picture, she said, "Well, this is the way I like it. I have all the handsome men on either side of me." She's single. She also was, she had really done well because she had remembered my name. Because I was there 1 year and the next year I came again. And she approached me and she said, "Tell me what's my name?" And I had to think. I said, "Magdalena." "That's right. And I remember your name too. It's Brother Tom." I didn't have the heart to tell her it wasn't Tom. Now, somebody else did. You know how there's always a killjoy in every crowd. But anyway, she's there. They meet out in the country. That's just plywood. But that's about 6 sheets of plywood stuck on the side of somebody's house business. This is Arcadio Mañon, who preaches there. He's the only full-time preacher there. Arcadio worked for the government in the bank that where they destroyed the old bills, the old money. And they gave several of them early retirement when he was about 40. He took it so that he could dedicate his full time to preaching. And then on the left, Brother Arcilio is one of the first Christians in the Dominican Republic back in the late 60s. There were about four of them baptized pretty well in the same time period. He's one of those people. And then Nino Esteves is a Dominicano, but he's been living in Venezuela for a number of years. And he comes once or twice a year to work in the Dominican Republic and has been a great help there. Again, there's a lot of work that could be done if we have the people. This is the church building of in an area called Los Tres Brazos, the three arms. And there are three arms of rivers that run right in there together. That's the origin of the name. There's about, probably 80 to 90 that meet there. And this group is one that was associated with the liberals, but Arcadio has worked with them, we've worked with them, and they have come a long way, much farther than I could have hoped, actually. Then this is the church building where Arcadio meets. Now, where Arcadio meets is out in the country. And I don't know all the little, what used to be a town that doesn't even have a post office in this area. But you do. Pick one of them. Well, you know, there's probably 30 or 40 people that live there, 15, 20, 30 houses. That's the area where Arcadio is working. But they're now up to about 40 members there because people see their need for God. And as I said this morning, I typically go there in May. I usually try and take two or three other people with me. Nino meets me there and we work because even with three or four of us preaching in two or three different places, we have more opportunities than we can get to. We can't get to all of them. This is the church building in St. Croix. And you know, you look at it and you think, well, it's not much. You're right. It's not. But we were meeting in a tent before that. So, I mean, it's always warm there. So, I mean, you know, we thought that we had arrived when we got this building. The new building that they are in the process of building, this was taken about a year ago. I thought they should have the roof on by now. We'll seat easily 100. And they're so happy and thankful for that. And then these are the brethren there. We could go into all the stories, but we don't have time for that. We've been gone since 98, and they have continued to be faithful. One of the things we've tried to do since about 2005 is Vacation Bible School. And we started in Dominica, since I've been going there the longest. La Plaine is the second place we did it. And it's a bigger village. So the first day we had about 26 or 7 children. And it was kind of, you know, it wasn't organized real well before we got there. Which, that's okay. But the preacher's wife used to work with a Head Start there. And so as all these children are leaving, she says, "Okay, Johnny, you tell your sister so-and-so and your brother so-and-so, they need to come tomorrow." And she did that with every child. By the end of the week, there were over 100. And they have over 100 every year. And they don't usually start with that many, but that's where they usually wind up. Because on the other side of the island is a smaller village. The enrollment, the particular year this photo was taken, the enrollment in the primary school was 63. Now, we had 64 most of the week, which means we had most of the kids. Now, we had littler than primary school. We had teenagers. But that's how important it is. And I mean, there's some of them there still to this day. When I'm in the village, the younger ones, "Is it Vacation Bible School?" We do this in the summer, obviously. It may be January, December. It doesn't matter. They know, they're hoping that it's Vacation Bible School, because that's how important it is to them. And just to kind of give you an idea, this is the church building at Via Cause. We have, for a number of years, done Vacation Bible School in the school there, in the school building, which happens to be right below, because this building will not hold them. And then this is the post office in Via Cause. Now, you look at this and you think, well, what about people who can't climb the stairs? Oh, it's not a problem. Any little child that you see in the area, you just tell them, "Come, come, come. Go get my mail. Tell the postman to give me my mail." And that's what happens, because that's the way it's done. Barbados, this is the first Church of Christ in the Eastern Caribbean, as I understand it. And this building goes back a number of years. It's a very large building, as you see here. This is what's left of the Barbaries Hill Church. There was a time, even when I first started going in 92, 93, where they would have 60, 65 people every service. And they meet Sunday twice. They meet Monday night for ladies' class, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. Friday night was men's class. And everybody that was supposed to be there was there. Now, most of those people even then were 60s and 70s. And so this is what's left. I was afraid this church was going to disappear a year or two ago, because they didn't realize there was a problem. And if there's no problem, we don't correct it. They finally have realized that. And I think the potential there is good. We're looking at an island of over 260,000, 270,000 people. And so there's plenty of room. This past June, the end of June, they had Vacation Bible School there. And one of the sisters at one of the... started by the institutional group, has a daycare. And she brought all 18 to 20 to 25 of her children every day. They started with about 18 and wound up with 30 by the time it was over. And Dana, you know, my wife was there, and she was thanking Sister Ann is her name, for bringing her children. And she said, "Oh, no. All the parents have thanked me for having this." And here they are on another of the days in Vacation Bible School. There's a lot to be done in the Caribbean, and brethren, we need help. And again, these, everything I showed you with the exception of the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico, English speaking. Now, it's a little different, but it's English. You can understand them. It may take you a time or two, but you can understand them. They understand you because they get American TV. So, you know, they understand you perhaps better than you do them. But there's a lot going on in other places as well. In Chile, you see a country 2,700 miles long, 150 less wide. You'll see Emilio Acevedo, who lives in Limache, which is right above Valparaiso, right there. Has a very good man, very humble man, who has done a lot to get things going there. And Brother Tom was talking about that the church here started in their home for the first little while. This is the church in La Cruz, and they still meet in different people's homes. This is where they meet on Sunday morning. And you probably don't realize it, but this is the living room, this is the auditorium, and this is the dining room. And on Sunday morning, all the living room furniture gets pushed up against the wall. That's where the church meets. And this particular Sunday that I preached, after we got through with services, then they brought the dining room table in and we all ate together. And that's what they do every Sunday because they cannot afford a meeting place. This is Emilio and his wife, Inez. Inez, as you can see, is not a tall woman, but she's, as they would say in Spanish, muy servicial. She's very accommodating. She's there, whatever you need, she's there to help you. And you know, anything that you need. This is one of the churches in Chile, in Limache, sorry, that meets out in an area called 18, the 18th of September. This congregation is in the Mapuche Indian Reserve. And the brother that is sitting right here below me, Sergio Pino, preaches about 45 minutes away. One of their members is from this area. She no longer lives there, but they started, Sergio started going over there to preach, and they're very skittish about outsiders, because typically in the past, outsiders have always come to take, not to give. Even the denominational preachers have needed many offerings. And so Sergio preached here for about a year. And people would come, faithfully, but no baptisms. No baptisms. No response of any kind. Until finally, and this is the man next to him is Francisco, the lonco, the chief of the tribe. He's the oldest member. And finally he told me, he said, you know, after about a year, we realized that he was not coming to take. He was coming to give. He was coming to help. And when he was baptized, there are now about 14 or 15 members there. I believe I'm the first, and probably to this point only American, that has preached there. Here's the outside of the building in downtown Santiago, the capital, on Calle Madrid. Some of the members, Brother Ralph Michel, not a very good picture, but there he is in the back. And then this is one of the church buildings in Talca, another city. If you know Vernon Hawkins, this is where Vernon was preaching when he went to Chile in the 60s. Unfortunately, none of that group remains, but it's the same city. Then another place that we went last year is Nicaragua. There's a lot of work going on there, but it has been hindered in the past because of jealousy and bickering among preachers. And part of that was support. You know, if I can prove that you're not faithful, then maybe I can get your support and that kind of thing. But a lot of it is just the machismo that is inherent. And that was one of the things we dealt with. We had a class with about 20, 25 preachers specifically addressing the fact that we're all on the same team, that we're all working together, that it doesn't matter which congregation is bigger. All it matters is, am I doing what I can do? And these brethren are going to great lengths. One of the places that they have been able to rekindle, I guess you would say, is on some big plantation. And it's a four-hour bus ride from Managua to the front gate. And then if you have to walk, it's 4 hours to where the brethren are. If they know you're coming and they provide a horse or a donkey there at the gate, you can do it in about an hour and a half to 2 hours. Now, I didn't go there. And I'm, whether I want to or not, I think I'm going next time. Because, you know, they've just really insisted. But there is a number of brethren that walk an hour to go preach. Once they drive, you know, go on the bus for another hour. A lot of potential. In Masachapa is the name of this village. And we had a change in our schedule, and the brother that was kind of coordinating for us called the preacher here. And he said, look, this is about 9 o'clock in the morning. Look, we have a change in schedule. We can come and have services there in Masachapa in the afternoon. But you know how transportation is. You know how crime is. We'll have to meet at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, if that opportunity were to be presented on a Monday morning here, how many of you would be here? And I'm not, it's a whole different society. I mean, we're talking a much more rural, agrarian society. But just really, how many of us would be able to make it? And we have our own car, something none of them have. We had 120 people. And they came on the bus, they walked, they had a dump truck that they chartered that went to a village 10 miles away twice. And they filled the back of that truck up both times. Those are the children that were there. And the building seats about 50 or 60. And that's everybody as tight as you can get. So these children, and there's about 50 of them, were down about a block and a half under a covered area. That's where they were being taught. And here is another area. This again is somebody's living room. When they have services, they either push out or take out the living room furniture. And you see, that's a pretty large group. And you notice there on the front row, all these girls. And, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12. Their parents don't come. They just live in the neighborhood. And one of the members is a teacher. And she told the preacher, she said, after services one afternoon, because they have their children's class on Saturday, and she said, do you have a ball? And he said, well, yeah, of course. You know, I've got boys. We got soccer balls here. She said, well, let me have it. She went out, and the boys went out, and they started playing with the ball. Soccer, you know, sort of. The street's about like this. So, you know, it's not much very good for soccer. But they started playing. And before too many minutes was gone, they had all the neighbor kids in there. And they have 40 to 50 kids every Saturday. And there's like three of them whose parents are Christians. And these girls, they'll come in and borrow the ball. But I mean, when it's, I don't remember what time they meet, but we're going to say it's 5 o'clock. When it's about 15 till 5, one of the girls gets the ball and says, okay, that's it. And they take the ball back in and they come and sit down. Because that's what started, but now they're there for the Bible study. And so that's one of the areas that I'm going to be targeting this year and next year as well. Barbados is one. And brethren, again, we need a lot of help here. Dana and I are planning, if all goes well, to stay a month in Barbados, in January probably. And what we'd like is for preachers to come. If you can stay a week, great. Just, you know, get three or four of them to come. Argentina, God's willing, I'll be going there in September. And Argentina is a huge country. But the churches are centered here in Buenos Aires. There's about eight. There's four people, one family that meets in Córdoba. There's a pretty large congregation in Mendoza. That's where Tommy Holly was for many years. Villa Mercedes is right here, 15 or so. And then down here, 14 hours by bus, at Comodoro Rivadavia, there's another church of about, they're up to about 14 members. They found it on the internet, found the truth on the internet, and they've been working, and they've grown from 3 to 7 to 8 to 11 to where they are today. But obviously, when you look at this, you have all of this area, all of this area where there are no churches. And that's where they're looking to hopefully to grow. And so we want to go and encourage them. Chile, again, a lot of opportunities. Dana went with me to Chile last year. And Dana does not speak a lot of Spanish. She understands quite a bit, but she doesn't speak a lot. So that, needs to say, limits her. She did a ladies' class with a translator on a Saturday that went really well. They had about 18 there. During the rest of the week, she is on crutches. She's on hydrocodone. She's sleeping 16 hours a day. But let me tell you whose visit I hear about every time. Every time I talk to Emilio. And Inez says to tell Dana hello. Inez doesn't tell me hello. She tells Dana hello. And I say that to say how important it is. Because, I mean, it's logical. When we send Christians to foreign countries to preach, who do we send? Men or women? And you know the answer to that question. And I don't see that the Bible authorizes churches to send women. I'm not suggesting that. But brethren, they can have, sisters, you can have such a powerful impact. And as I say, Dana does. In Chile, Nicaragua, again. Because I think there's so much there. They just need a little encouragement, a little polishing, for lack of a better word. And then these are a couple of churches that I want you to be aware of and to pray for. In Uruguay, there are not but about three churches of Christ. And the newest one is up here in Rivera. This is the only sound church in the whole country. And this is another one that began last September when seven people were baptized. They had gone on the internet, found Wayne Partain's website, studied. They were baptized in September. They continue to need your prayers. In Peru, in this area up here, you probably can't see Sullana. And Emilio Acevedo was there in April. Because there is a church there, it's like three or four people. And as he was going through the marketplace on Sunday morning, they see a man who's reading Robert Harkrider's First Rudiments of Christianity in Spanish. And Emilio begins to talk with him. Well, he preached in that Pentecostal church Sunday night, Monday night, and Tuesday night. The preacher came to the house where he was staying Monday morning and Tuesday morning. And Wednesday morning, they went to the river and 14 of them were baptized. Six more were baptized in July. The church went from three or four or five to 25. And brethren, you know that there's still a lot of teaching and a lot of things that they need. So please remember the church in Sullana and Rivera in your prayers. And I'm going to close by just saying, how can I help? Obviously, one of the best things is by going. Whether it's on the English-speaking islands, if you speak some Spanish, brethren, let me tell you, the brethren are very forgiving. They don't expect you to speak Spanish perfectly. And there's a lot of brethren who said, well, you know, my Spanish is just not good enough. That may be. But the very fact that you come means a lot to them. And you'll be amazed how much you'll pick up in a week or two. You'll be amazed. But as I also said this morning, not everybody can go. And I understand that. It's just a real thing. Writing and emailing. To most of the English-speaking brethren, you're going to have to write them. Because technology has not arrived there. I mean, yes, it's there, but no, it's not there. In La Plaine, which is a large village, one of the American aid organizations has two computers with internet. That's the sum total. Whereas in any Spanish-speaking country, everybody has access to. One of the things I'm doing is I'm sending out about 2,000 articles to about 2,000 people a month in Spanish throughout all of Mexico, Central and South America, because they so many of them. And you would be amazed. Some of the questions that I get are very, very simple. Some of them are not, but some of them are very simple. But that's how basic their knowledge is. And again, obviously, the most obvious, I think, by prayer, by praying. For Dana and I, as we're working, but also for our brethren. Because depending on where you are, they all face challenges. They vary depending on where you are. One brother in Colombia asked me the other day, please pray for me, because some of our brethren live out in these little villages out in the jungle, and he says, and I'm the only one that can of the members of the church there, I'm the only one that can go, because the rebels know me and they leave me alone. I don't have to tell you what the situation in Mexico is right now. You know that as well as I do. And the list goes on and on and on. Think about our brethren in Comodoro. 14 hours by bus from the nearest church. And they don't get visitors just passing through. Because it's not on the way to nowhere. And if you're going, you're going to go there. And they get lonely. I mean, since they knew I was coming. Brother, you have to come here. Brother, you have to come. The last thing I got was, you will come on a Sunday, right? They need encouragement. They need our prayers. And then I think, obviously as well, by helping financially. Is there something you can do? Yes, there's something that each and every one of us can do. And as I suggested this morning, don't think you only have to, if you can't do anything big, that it doesn't matter. It does matter. Every little bit helps. And I have been sick. I don't want to go into all the details, but I had major surgery the end of March. Well, you know what I was doing in April? Not much. I could sit at the computer for a little bit, for about an hour at a time. And you know, people would say, oh, you know, what are you? Well, you know, you're working. I said, yeah, I'm putting my granito. I'm putting in my grain of sand. But you know, that's what it's all about. If each of us will put our little grain of sand in, every little bit helps. Because One of the things they all deal with is we're the only ones like this. And they may have heard, oh yes, there were 1,200 Christians assembled to sing Friday night. They can't even imagine that. They can't imagine 100 because they've never seen it. But every little bit that we can do will help them. And so, brethren, I would ask for your help in this, in whatever way that you can. Now, we're going to sing the song that's already been selected. And this is a song that deals with his beginning with as a Christian. If you're not right with God, if you have not dedicated your life to serving Him, then you're not going to make the effort to help others. And that's very understandable. But we encourage you tonight, this afternoon, excuse me, no windows to see, that to make that decision, because you're not promised tomorrow. You're not promised tomorrow. All you have is today. And you and I both know people, young, who had many years of life ahead of them, who are gone. Some accidents, some illness. It doesn't really matter what. But they thought they had tomorrow. And they didn't. And you're not promised tomorrow either. If you're not right with the Lord today, we're here to help you. Let us know as we stand and sing the song.
Bring Christ your blood.